Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and the world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast.
Hi, this is Props and Slops. I'm Aaron. One of these two guys is Will. Will, say hi.
Hello.
And the other one is Roy. Roy's got yelling from Ala in the background.
Hello.
We Props and Slops, where we talk about things that we prop. That means we like them, like Roy. And Slop, that means things that we are annoyed with and didn't like Will today.
I knew it was coming, and yet I still enjoyed it.
There's no reason Glazer would take control of the introduction like that unless he was doing a bit. So
oh, yeah. But obviously, I have no interest in introductions. I'm just like, can we move on from this? I listen to some podcasts, and there's like 25 minutes of bullshit at the beginning, and I hate it every time. And I'm like,
oh, man.
And then in the middle of it, I always realize, oh, that's me.
Oh, yeah, that is 100%
the
white
book. We do.
You really would not like what my current favorite podcast is, which is the Resleevables, which is a magic podcast where they go over old sets and talk about the design principles and gameplay and stuff.
So they just do what we've been doing with
But about like tournaments. It's more like, here's a tournament we both went to in this era, and they talk about it for 15 minutes and talk about their friends and have dumb stories from that era. And I'm like, this is what be what the white book. It makes me actually think about White Book when I'm listening to that part.
Okay.
So I would just like it noted that hell is podcasts about old games.
And that I mean, all you hell. Do, you Ooh, just listen.
That's something to look forward to.
I could use a new podcast. I mean, I won't listen to a new podcast, but I could use one.
I mean, I'm sure we could recommend a bunch, but.
Yeah, but like Patrick Day might be on one, and like we can't have that shit.
Whoa! I wouldn't recommend a podcast that Patrick does.
Great decision. I mean, Sam Whitehead might be on it, but like I already talked to you, and I don't need people that just agree with you all the time.
Oh my god! Yeah. Well, does it help that Sam is unhappy that he agrees with me?
Sam is unhappy, sort of, about everything but coffee.
Actually true, yes. He's very excited about coffee right now.
So he is a slightly grumpy person, I would say.
He's a little grumpy boy. He's a dwarf. He's like an angry little dwarf.
Oh.
What?
Don't. No.
No?
No.
Why not?
I don't even know if we're supposed to use the term dwarf in reference to actual human beings who aren't fictional anymore. Much less... towards
I was using it in a Tolkien-esque sense.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you shouldn't use it to refer to non-fictional creatures like D&D dwarves or Tolkien dwarves.
Are we sure Sam is non-fictional?
I mean, if there you go. But if you're just going to make like pop culture references, come on, surely you need to make an angry elf reference, right?
I've actually been, as you guys were talking, trying to figure out what Will would be. Because like, Roy is clearly a very clumsy elf, right? Like,
I'm a very clumsy everything, so.
Like, he's
I
a
feel
very
like if I was
elf.
Reincarnated as anything, I would be clumsy, yes.
I feel like Will would be an incredible centaur.
Whoa. I'm not turning this down, but I'm really curious why.
Because you love running and you're handsome and you have a like well-kept beard. That's about as far as I got. Okay. But like, I feel like this fits. Very noble and like, rah, but then late for everything, even though you're fucking running all the time. Sorry. Like, I mean, this all just seems to fit for me. You're a centaur. I am a asshole. Like, I'm the asshole human character, obviously. It's like, everyone's like, I'm a cool race. And it's like, hey, who's the human asshole? Me.
So all I'm hearing out of this is that we need to start like a white book D&D group.
I mean, I've heard that we shouldn't play MMOs together, so I'm not sure how much better D&D would be.
I've had so many abortive attempts to play D&D during quarantine.
That's a real problem. I think at this point in our grown-up lives, I think everyone just has to come to the realization and agreement, like, you can't just play giant open-ended campaigns. Like, you need to just shoot for trying to get as many people together as you can for like a one shot or maybe like three sessions. Past that, it's going to fall apart.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know how to do this, so someone else take the lead.
What, to transition us to about...
I know how to transition. I can always transition. I'm an English teacher. Half of my classes is... What's the word? Wow, I'm tired and drunk. In case you couldn't tell, listeners.
I couldn't tell you were tired, but I could tell you were drunk.
I'm exhausted. I'm also exhausted. So at 2 in the morning, and this will transition us into our first video game of all things. But I'm going to prop Let's Go Pikachu. We got it for Noah. It's delightfully fun and simple for small children. If you have small children like Pokemon, I highly recommend it. But at 2 in the morning, 2:14-ish in the morning, I feel a tap on my back, and I'm like the deepest of sleep because I was exhausted. And it's like, Daddy, Daddy, kid, what? Let's go play video games. Like, no, I'm sleeping.
He's like, Glazer, you're living the dad dream.
And he's like, we don't have to tell mommy. We can just go play. And I was like, Noah, it's the middle of the night.
Be like, kid, no. I like your energy, but it's too early.
and then he just kept like, he was like, but please. I was like, Noah, no. And then Carla woke up and he like ran away. She was like, what
happened? Are you sure you didn't imagine it, Glazer?
I'm 100%. We've all discussed this. And like, she woke up and like, I immediately ratted him out. I was like, I'm trying to sleep. I'm not dealing with this shit. I'm at the like, and then so she went to check on him. He was like, I had a nightmare. So yeah,
a nightmare of not being able to play Pokemon at 3 o'clock in the morning. That does sound nightmarish. I mean, what's the point of being a 5-year-old if you can't play Pokemon at 3 o'clock in the morning? Like,
I mean, I used
practically
to have
torture.
I used to have a Switch, and now Noah has Let's Go Pikachu, and Carla has Animal Crossing, and now I have a podcast. So, like, I don't know. These are things that
they happen. Say about happy family, happy life. So,
yeah, great. I mean, maybe I'll actually get to play Trails of Cold Steel for more than 40 seconds.
It is an excellent game, so.
But yeah, props to both of those for my family loving them. And we kick two things off the list before we even talked about the Snyder Cut.
Woo! Well, is that what we're leading with?
You want to lead with the Snyder Cut?
Off the list? I mean, anything else, we're burying the lead, right? Like,
Falcon Winter Soldier is also like a big pop culture moment.
Yeah, it's
it was a big pop culture, nerd culture weekend, so.
It was the same as...
I have more to say about
Snyder. Like, I like Falcon and Winter Soldier a lot, I think. But,
well, if you say more, then we're just talking Falcon and Winter Soldier, so...
So I don't
Which one are you wanting to do, Aaron?
So I don't like Falcon and Winter Soldier more than the Snyder Cut. I think I like them fairly similarly. I thought they were both really solid and flawed. Like, I enjoyed... So, let's... I mean, we can list 7,000 problems with Falcon Snyder Cut, right? Can you guys hear that?
I thought we were going to list at least a dozen of them, right?
Okay, so like the random morning song that comes on literally whenever it pans in Amazonian, it drove me nuts.
I mean, it's her theme.
No, it's not her theme. No. That's when she fights. It's okay. Does anybody watch it with the subtitles on? Like,
no.
Whenever an Amazonian goes onto the screen, the subtitles say "Ancient Lamentations," and you know, some group chats were just like, were just like messaging that to us as we were watching it. It's ridiculous. It's both an annoying sound and it's an annoying like subtitle. So it's just like, ugh.
And like the annoying part to me wasn't that it was there. Like, I don't mind her having a theme. It's that if it panned by her for a second, it shifted to it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, I just love like, we're the like
randomly gonna scroll through.
Go ahead, Roy. Go ahead.
Oh, I love the Wonder Woman like fight theme from her movie and from her first appearance on in what's that movie? Batman versus Superman, where like Wonder Woman finally shows up in the costume. It's like, you boys literally wasted 2 hours of everyone's life, not, you know, leading up to your stupid fight that wasn't very exciting. And let's now actually fight the villain of this movie. And I'm like, oh yeah, Wonder Woman's great. That theme I like, but that Ancient Lamentation sound that like any, and that fight between fucking Darkseid's sub and the Amazonians was just that sound kept playing over and over and over again. And it was so annoying. Mm-hmm. Like it just made the Amazonians just like auditorily annoying.
I was like, do you know how hard it is for me to root against Princess Buttercup? And I was like, just chill.
Love Cameron was in this.
Was she not? What?
Robin Wright.
I'm making a Powerpuff Girls reference.
Oh no. Prince, not Buttercup, Princess Buttercup.
Princess.
From the greatest movie ever.
Yeah.
So other Noah story for the week is he asked me the other day if giants were real. And I was like, they absolutely are. I can show you a movie with one. So we're going to watch The Princess Bride soon.
What's that thing is your child is actually going to believe that giants exist rather than a person calling themselves a giant.
Excuse me. Andre the Giant is Andre the Giant, not Andre the person who calls himself the Giant. Mm. I did a whole mockery of you.
Yes, I understood
it. No one could see. Okay. No, like there was a whole dance with it.
And the hands.
Yes, you're so obviously wrong.
Well, bringing that back to Snyder Cut, you know what else was just wrong so often in the movie?
Everything involving Superman?
That too.
Everything.
But before we left the music alone, aside from just Wonder Woman, I just frequently like kept thinking the music sounded off. Like I couldn't quite put my finger on it exactly, but like the cues didn't feel like they quite lined up right. I don't know. I mostly noticed it when it would switch to some kind of poppy song. I mean, and like other films I've seen have done that well, and other superhero films, but something just did not connect with me musically.
Zack Snyder's music design is terrible. Like everything that's not written by Hans Zimmer is
the best like, moment garbage. Of the movie was musical. The random horny Icelandic person,
yes, singing the sweater song. Sniffing. Well, that is what we needed to talk about.
Wrong with that movie? That was amazing.
It was like a minute and a half of pure terror.
It was terrible for the first like 20 seconds, and then you realized it wasn't going to end, and that this was so serious, and it crossed all the way over to amazing. It's my favorite part of the movie, without any question.
It's like so bizarre. I read about that in the Ars Technica review before watching anything, Thursday. And when I was reading that, I was like, no, that can't really happen. And then I watched it and I was like, oh my God, it's even weirder than they made it out to be.
So perfect. Like, it's the most Snyder Cut thing that could ever possibly happen in that movie.
No, and
in
20 years, that is not correct.
Wait, in 20 years, if you're like, hey, remember the Snyder Cut? I'd be like, yes, the sweater.
No.
That's all I'm going to remember, but it's going to be beautiful.
When I think about the Snyder Cut 20 years from now, I'm going to think, you mean the movie where the Joker made a reach around joke to Batman? That is the most Snyder Cut moment in
that was bad.
The movie.
That whole dream sequence thing was.
Which is not a dream, terrible. It's a premonition. Like
premonition thing that was not established in any way, shape, or form. Since when does Batman have premonitions? I don't know.
Batman
I guess he does
Superman.
Now.
Since Batman
remember Superman, didn't he? Yeah, this is like an established part of that stupid character. This is by far
wow
Like, this makes George Clooney Batman look amazing. This is by far the worst version of Batman.
Well, actually, you know, speaking of Batman, barely any of this movie really was Batman. It drove me insane.
Wait, why? We don't need more Batman movies. Hold,
well,
Batman's
sorry.
Batman can go away.
Let me start with this and say I never watched the Whedon cut. I bounced off the Snyderverse really hard after Man of Steel because it fundamentally misunderstood everything about the character, except for the fact that he's invincible. And so I hadn't watched the Whedon stuff. So I'm assuming this also largely happened in the Whedon stuff. But it drove me insane that Bruce Wayne spent all his time like recruiting the Avengers as Bruce Wayne and completely giving away his identity. Like,
that happens.
But the Whedon cut is basically all about Batman. It's like
Batman is
the Batman cut.
Yeah, it's a main.
The Whedon cut might as well be the Batman. Yeah. Whereas, like,
which is the weird thing about the Snyder cut versus the Whedon cut. It's one of the weirder.
The Batman cut versus the Cyborg cut.
The Batman cut versus the sweater cut. Call it
the sweater.
Call it by its name.
But, you know that movie? Honestly, it's what 4.5 hours. You could cut it down. I mean, you could cut 99.8% of that film. Cut it down to just the sweater scene, and that would be amazing.
I would be so happy. I was so mad at the start of the sweater scene and like just kept going until I was like, all right, fine. You've earned my respect.
It's like one of those bad comedy bits that you're watching and you're like, okay, surely this is going to end. It can't keep going.
By the end of it,
last 45 minutes.
We're all in this together, Batman.
Yeah.
So the intro
to it. Let's be real. That movie should have opened with the Amazon fight sequence, right? Like,
I mean,
the advisor comes in and is like, evil sleeps and blah, blah, blah. Like, bam, that should have been our like cold open. None of this Superman screaming.
Superman screaming was awful.
Yeah, that was terrible. And all these
also
like
better than the Whedon cuts version.
All these crazy like panoramic sweeps that are like mostly wasted in this bizarre 4:3 aspect ratio. Like, I mean, I suppose if it was 1999, that would have made sense. But why now? And then why shoot all these shots that like scream for widescreen enjoyment, and then don't do it?
So, because Snyder.
Also, but, HBO Max drove me insane. I watched a bunch of this on my phone at work.
Well, that's a bad decision.
Probably, but I want to specifically say something that blew my mind that HBO Max did, because this is in a 4:3 resolution. I've been watching a lot of like 90s sitcoms lately. I'm relatively used to that. But I'm used to that being centered. HBO Max did not center this film. It wasn't all the way to the edge either. It was like one quarter from one side of my screen and then a bunch of empty space, like extra, like non-equal empty space on the other side. It was so weird.
Well, Zack Snyder's original vision was to discourage you from watching his brilliant art on your phone. So it's just living Zack Snyder's vision.
It's not better on my TV.
Like that 4:3 aspect ratio is even worse on my TV.
That's Zack Snyder's vision. I don't know
enough about movies to know that. So Zack Snyder's an ass. Like very clearly. Look, he's less of an ass than Whedon, which is who knew was a thing I would think.
That is not something I thought life. I would have. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, that is not something
that never would have thought I would have expected to have. However, either way, I am most positive on this movie of the three of us somehow. I thought everything that I enjoyed, if not thought was good, because I thought very little of this was actually good, but I enjoyed basically everything that wasn't Batman or Superman. Because like Snyder fundamentally, like in a really weird like teenager who argues on the internet way, doesn't understand Batman and Superman.
Yeah, correct. Neither one.
I mean, like,
at all.
To be fair, he made a brilliant art film about how much he doesn't understand Batman or Superman.
Fair.
You know, if I'd gone into it with that mindset.
No, but like, if you watch it for like the Cyborg stuff, like Cyborg is fantastic. I like Cyborg. I like the Flash. I really like the way Wonder Woman. I like the way
every Wonder Woman's in this movie.
I like Wonder Woman. Fine.
A lot of her action scenes and CG were weird and rubber bandy.
That's that character.
And
stuff,
she went out of her way to like save these terrorists or save the kids from these terrorists, so they could like watch the terrorists get exploded in front of them. And
the
terrorists weren't connected to anything. It would have taken all of one line to make them like dark side cultists or something and actually have a reason to exist.
I believe, and God knows my memory on this is not great, they were somehow related to Batman versus Superman.
They were not.
Really?
I've seen Batman versus Superman 3 times, including once the stupid Snyder cut, like the extra long cut that kind of makes that movie slightly make more sense.
Why do you hate yourself?
Well, Al and I went, we did the Summer of Batman, where we watched like every Batman. It was like right when, it was during the pandemic.
Hate yourself because you're married?
No, but like we just watched every Batman movie. So that includes like the good ones. Well, there's only one really good one, The Dark Knight Rises. And then we watched a bunch of the mediocre ones.
There's one good and one. Then, there's a couple great ones.
And then we got to the Snyder stuff and the Whedon movie too, which was the second time I watched Justice League, the Whedon cut. I can't remember. I saw it once at theaters. And once at home, but
it was amazing how little of the Whedon cut I remembered until I like.
It's the. I mean, the thing is, what really shouldn't have been surprising to me, but was slightly surprising to me, is they are actually basically the same movie. Like just they don't feel the same, but they are the same. Like all the plot beats are the same. Like that, I expected the Snyder cut, the way like Snyder fans were describing it, is that like something fundamental about the movie would change, and it doesn't. No. It's just the Snyder cut is just makes more sense, but it's bloated, right? Like the thing I took away from this is it's basically the same movie as Joss Whedon's Justice League, but it's just longer, so things make more sense, but it's still
it
kind of bad.
It shifts the focus. Like so,
it does.
The Whedon cut was about Batman and Superman because those are the only characters he knew. Like I'm Did pretty he? Sure.
I mean, there's some stuff about Wonder Woman. She's in there too.
Sure, but like, and the Snyder cut's like fundamentally not about Batman, and like Batman is 100% a side character, and like the 100% weakest parts of the movie were Superman. There was not a Superman scene I liked. Period. Like I thought Superman remains, I guess, is probably a better word for it. Absolutely wrong. Like, incredible. Yeah. Like,
it's a shame. Cavill could do a good Superman, I'm sure.
He definitely
could. But he's failed by both script and direction.
Sure. But either way, like, everything Superman related, like, the second he was wearing a black costume at the end, I was like, oh, he's just going to keep being dark, shitty Superman. We didn't learn anything, huh?
Well, I don't think he's trying. Like, I think, like, in the Whedon cut, there's a sharper demarcation where Superman is clearly more Boy Scout-y at the end of the Whedon cut. That's a little present in the Snyder cut. He's definitely comes off, like, Snyder comes around at the end of Batman versus Superman to a bit more optimistic-facing Superman who acts, if you squint... He kind of looks like the Superman that's in Superman Lois or in the comics at the good moments. Like it's kind of there. And that's like also at the end of this movie. But of course because it's a Zack Snyder movie, it's a much more violent and more willing to inflict pain on people. Superman, but every character is willing to do that, from Batman to Wonder Woman to Flash to Cyborg. Like they just so kill like Steppenwolf in this movie that I'm just like,
that was so hilarious. Was like some of these scenes are like just funny.
Yes,
like unintentionally.
I mean, I don't care if it's intentional if I'm laughing.
I mean, that's fair. Maybe, I mean, there's just
I
don't know. Like this movie, like makes Darkseid look like a shitty version of Thanos, which is so laughable. Like it's so laughable. I've been trying really hard to like cut down on like the comic book snob in me when it comes to like superhero stuff, but like I can't cut the Darkseid thing. Like Thanos is a shitty Darkseid, not Darkseid is a shitty Thanos.
That's not true. Like Darkseid's Thanos started out as a shitty dark side. They diverge pretty sharply.
They did. And which gives you room now to make them feel substantially different in like their respective cinema universes.
So Dark Side wasn't the villain, right? Like he's the villain in a similar way to the villain that Thanos is the villain in the first Avengers movie.
I mean, he's a bit more of an active role, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, they vaguely sort of like mention Thanos in Avengers.
Right.
There's a lot of screen time devoted to Darkseid in this film.
Lots probably overrated.
A decent amount.
In comparison.
The movie is 300 hours long. Steppenwolf is all about being stepped on by Darkseid. Like, that's his entire motivation in the entire movie. There's a lot of Darkseid. Whether he shows it up or not, it isn't the thing. But Desaad also plays a pretty big supporting role.
Yeah, I wish they explained Desaad at all.
Yeah.
My wife was very confused.
All we got was like one shot of her.
We don't need more bloat to this.
But I mean, if you're going to bother to show her.
No, you show her as an Easter egg for a fan.
Yeah. I have no problem with Granny Goodness thing.
Okay.
Also, I enjoyed Spider-Man in the movie very much. He was fantastic. One of my favorite characters.
Spider-Man?
Yeah. You're
calling the Flash Spider-Man?
Yes.
Okay.
He was Peter Parker.
I do have to say, as much as I just kind of despise, what's his face? Yeah, Ezra Miller. I don't have any good reason. There's just like certain people, you just see their face and it just rubs you the wrong way. He's one of them. I do have to admit, most of the bright spots in that film to me were Flash scenes.
I think he was fantastic. He was the best Spider-Man on film in ages.
Yeah. I think you're being unfair to the fact that Barry Allen,
go ahead.
Since the Flash TV show, that's like a lot closer to what the Flash personality is outside of the comics. Like
they're making him Wally.
Yeah, it's like closer to Wally West.
Okay, so here's how I'm going to try and explain this, having not watched the Flash TV show. Wally in that era was very similar to Spider-Man, except competent. Where, like, Peter Parker was always the Parker luck and sort of a disaster. And, like, everything falls apart all the time. Wally was, like, a competent human being who was just young.
Semi-competent, but, like, not confident.
That's a big difference between him and Peter Parker, right? Like, they're similar people. I feel like this is much more Peter Parker.
It is much more Peter Parker-y. I mean, like, the problem...
I'm not mad at it, dude.
Yeah,
give me Spider-Man, I don't care what you call it. You can't give me a good Superman if you can call it a Superman. Give me a good Spider-Man. Have fun.
I think, like, the problem that Barry Allen suffers from is that, like...
He sucks.
Yeah, Barry Allen sucks. Like, he's just, like, Hal Jordan, but fast. He's, like, boring... He's
the blandest of the Flashes by far.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow more boring Hal Jordan.
Yeah, he's just, like, a boring stereotype of a 1950s
I swear we've done this on this podcast.
Yeah, like, I feel like we've talked about this
before. We probably have.
Yeah. I guess we'd not begrudge it. But I like the Snyder Cut more than the Whedon Cut, but that is, like, damning with faint praise. I'm just ready for the Snyderverse to be over, and if this is the code to the Snyderverse, that's fine. This is the best Zack Snyder superhero movie that I've watched.
By far.
And that is, like, damning with the most fake praise possible.
Here's my compliment to Watchmen.
Ugh.
No, it wasn't. But here's what I'm going to compare it to. I think it's better than Thor the Dark World. Because it feels worse than Thor. But in the same realm as Thor.
Okay.
Like on the same level as Thor. Because it feels like the same level of.
It's like a C-minus superhero movie.
I have it at about a C. I think it's a C. Like, if it was a Marvel movie, you'd be like, yeah, it's not one of my very bottom tier, but it's not like touching the top 15.
Yeah. I mean, it's no Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider, right?
I mean, it is exactly Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider.
Really bad, man.
I think Ghost Rider is the stupidest idea in history and don't care. Like, I've always thought Ghost Rider is stupid. I don't know why. I also don't like motorcycles, so that's probably the
problem. Okay. So one last logic question before we leave the Snyder Cut behind. because I just want to know if my brain works differently from everyone else's in regards to this or what. So when we're getting the mother box explained to us, right? And we get Cyborg's origin story really spelled out, and we get this big analogy at the end about, you know, burning a house down from a match and the mother box being able to rebuild the house out of the smoke.
Yeah.
And everyone just kind of pauses, and Barry's like, are you guys thinking what I'm thinking? And they're like, fuck yeah, let's bring back Superman. Am I the only person that no, that was nowhere. Was that on my radar? That was not what it said that it could do. It, like, I was not thinking about that. I'm thinking, oh my God, Vic can put his human body back together.
So.
I went with them.
No, you have to get that, like, Batman's ridiculously terrible in this. Like, Batman and Superman are both ridiculously terrible, but Batman's entire arc here is that he's obsessed with Superman because he let him down. Like, that's all Batman is. He's got nothing.
It is entirely Batman's fault that Superman died. In
literally my least favorite movie in existence, yes.
Like, I mean, the thing that I will credit Zack Snyder with.
Like, Birth of a Nation, I guess.
I mean, Batman versus Superman is the worst modern era superhero movie.
It's the worst modern era movie.
I mean, I'm sure you can find counterexamples for that. That's like,
that's bold.
But
should watch it.
I will give
Batman
Snyder
versus
credit.
Superman. I don't know if I hate myself that much.
It's pretty bad.
I mean, Roy apparently does three times.
I mean, I have a very high tolerance for superhero movies. But like, I will give Snyder this credit that Batman realizes that, like, basically the entire Batman versus Superman movie is him just like fucking up. And I appreciate that. That's also present somewhat in the Whedon cut, but like not as forefront. Cause that's kind of like Batman's only note in this movie is we need to create the team. And I'm sorry that Superman died.
You know who doesn't exist besides my favorite sexy scene ever? Aquaman.
Yeah, Aquaman is pointless.
The sweaters.
But
just shouldn't exist. He does nothing but occasionally give bro-y one-liners and throw his spear.
He actually does less in this cut than Whedon's cut. Like, Whedon added stuff with him. Like I was expecting some, like, Aquaman to be more invited, like have more energy. Like, that fight, like, the big fight that they have outside of, I don't know, Chernobyl or whatever. Like, Aquaman does more in the Whedon cut. I was expecting that to be present, but no, it wasn't present. It was also weird, like, and apparently, like, the Batman going on a suicide run thing was a Whedon inclusion, not a Snyder idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was another thing I was surprised that was a Joss Whedon idea.
Oh, I wasn't surprised about that. That's such a Joss Whedon idea.
So,
I just want to understand, like, what I really struggle to understand, and again, generally positive on this. Like, I really thought Thor was a fine movie. I really think this is a fine movie. Disaster in so many ways. But, like, decent. Is, like, Batman and Superman aren't hard characters to understand. I think I really got them when I was, like, 6. Right? Like, I don't understand how two supposedly intelligent people who've made millions of dollars making movies don't understand Batman and Superman. Like, neither one is complicated. And, like, maybe the problem is that they wanted them to be complicated and they weren't. So they were like, let's add complication. But it's just,
well, artistically and ideologically, like, Zack Snyder cannot accept the character of Superman, right? Like, and in fact, the last two movies, you can even say that all of Zack Snyder's superhero movies are Zack Snyder, like, trying to accept the concept of Superman and then at the end of the day rejecting it, right? Like,
like, the entire concept of Superman is, if you could do anything, you should help people. That's it.
Like, you also can't trust Superman. Like, that's the central thesis of Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder basically is Lex.
So, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. But, like, the central premise of Superman is, if you had the power to do anything, what you should do with it is help other people.
Yes. Like, yeah, what keeps this powerful being from utilizing it the way most people would?
Why doesn't he wear a mask, and why aren't we scared of him? Because all he wants to do is help people, and everyone can see that because he is so desperate to try and help people. And that's like it. That's all. Yeah. Like, and it's the most simple, like, 7-year-old concept. Yeah. Like, that it's just like, yeah, got it.
Yeah, I just desperately want that, like, a live action adaptation.
Then you should watch. Will, you will like Superman and Lois then.
Okay, I need you to watch it.
Like, it's very close to that kind of interpretation of Superman, and it tries.
That's not an interpretation. Like,
well, but I mean, well, there's not, because there's three movies that, and then they're the most successful superhero, like, Superman movies that aren't Superman 1 and 2, right?
Okay.
Like,
okay, so, but in fairness, they're the only.
There's also Superman 3, Superman 4, Superman Returns.
I don't know.
Al and I went through, like, Superman.
I mean, Returns was kind of like before the superhero boom kind of figured itself out. I honestly do have to give Brandon Routh credit. Like, the.
Poor Cyclops.
He portrayed, like, he just exuded that archetypal, like, good guy, Boy Scout Superman. Like, he was an
excellent Superman. I thought he was a great Superman.
He was a fine Superman. That movie's just terrible, though.
Yeah, yeah. There's other problems with that movie.
But I like that movie more than Man of Steel.
Agreed.
Superman is in it.
But that's like, yeah. I mean, saying that I like a movie more than Man of Steel is really not, like, that's. I mean, that's like saying, like, I like a movie more than 300. That's the movie. Like, I have hated Zack Snyder since I saw 300. 300
I like
is.
I like 300. Yeah, it's stupid.
They should just burn the culture we grew up with.
That would probably be a good idea.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I think that the thing is that Zack Snyder, like, fundamentally, like, he is a like, his ideological perspective is a libertarian bro. Like, I've watched enough Zack Snyder movies. Like, that is where his view is. And he cannot accept a character like Superman. And he also, like, can't even really accept Batman. That's the other weird thing. Yeah. Like,
because he got to that sort of, like, libertarian pinnacle and then still is, like, turning around to, well, theoretically help people anyway. I don't know if we need to delve into that analysis of Batman.
So it felt like the Falcon and Winter Soldier was the same exact tone as the Snyder Cut.
The what? Man, Aaron's just, like, coming out swinging today.
I thought Falcon and Winter Soldier was more boring than that. It had smarter things to say about the world we live in than the Snyder Cut. But, like...
Yes, well, that's also...
Noah. I mean, so does Noah.
That's fair. But it was just more enjoyable doing it. Like,
oh, I don't think
was,
so.
I felt like there was actual, like, heart and character to it. I did not get that out of the cut.
So...
I wanted something more fun from Falcon and Winter Soldier than what we got for the first episode. And I know what it's supposed to be. It just felt like it was, like, everything is awful in much the same way that Snyder Cut was.
I think everything is awful.
And no one fondled a sweater the whole episode.
No sweater, but we did get Bucky playing with a clock.
You know what?
Playing Battleship.
Wait, you know who makes this show incredible? Bucky needs to be gay. There has been no gayer fucking Marvel character than Bucky. We just need to come to terms with that. Bucky is gay. It needs to be canonical. Like, it needs to stop being, like, on the internet. Make Bucky gay. Let's move on.
I am doubtful that Disney will go that route.
Yeah, because they suck.
Yeah, agree.
But, so, talking about Falcon Winter Soldier, I see a little bit where Glazer's coming from. But I think that, I mean, this is a very specific story, right, about how Sam Wilson is going to come to terms with being Captain America. And, you know, there needs to be some work to line that up. And this episode does some of that. I just think the episode is, like, weirdly unbalanced. Like, all of the, like, I think if they had, like, moved that Bucky fight scene a little bit more into the middle and it kind of, like, broke up the big character moments, that would have felt better. But it sort of more feels like you get a lot of excitement at the beginning. Then there's a lot of this kind of, like, slow building of Sam and Bucky as characters and setting up where they are so that they can be smushed together in the next episode. And then the episode is just like literally making you wait for the big reveal at the end. And so it's like a weirdly structured and weirdly paced episode. You know, a good thing way I heard this described is it's like writing for the trade. Like it understands that you are like invested. Like you're not going to sit here and watch Falcon and Winter Soldier and not be willing to watch the second one. So it's like willing to like waste your time a little bit, if not waste your time, but like not spend your time in the most like keep you hooked way. Like they assume you're already hooked and they like are willing to like let you go along with where they want to be.
I don't think it's wrong for them to consider you already hooked. Like who at this point is just randomly tuning in to Disney Plus and saying, I haven't touched any of the Marvel stuff. Let's start here.
I'm not hooked on these characters. Bucky's entire character arc has been, why aren't he and Steve fucking yet?
Yeah. I'm not even sure he has an arc.
I'm not in any way kidding. Like it's them gazing longingly at each other. There's been nothing else to his arc. It's like, we're clearly in love and Disney won't pull the trigger on this. And Falcon's arc has been comedic relief for Ant-Man. Why are you assuming I'm fucking invested?
That is unfair to what they have given Falcon. Like,
really? When's the last time he did anything?
He was pretty reasonable in Winter Soldier.
After Winter Soldier.
He was reasonable in Civil War. Like, he's an important supporting character in Civil War. Like, he's not, like, he's on Steve's side the whole time. He's Steve's wingman, like, the entire movie. Oh. Like he's the Falcon in there. Like Sam is the Falcon, and like I think he's just the Falcon in all of his appearances. Like he's Sam is Steve's best friend and is watching out for him, and he's an Avenger in Civil War kicking butt, and then in Infinity War he's a new Avenger or Secret Avenger or whatever they want to call themselves, like kicking butt with Steve. Like
yes, he is there. He is absolutely present in other movies.
Yeah, but I'm acting like a lot of Marvel characters, like it's all about the performance that makes you buy into those characters. That's why people love Bucky, even though he's done nothing but fall off a train and gaze longingly at Steve.
So people love Bucky because people want him to fuck Steve.
Already. Right, because of Sebastian.
I love Bucky because I love him in the comics.
If you literally read the script, no one would be like, oh, Steve and Bucky are going to bang.
So Falcon has nothing. He is in one movie as a character and a bunch of other movies as background scenery or comic relief. And I really like the idea behind Falcon in the MCU, but it hasn't come through on screen. They're assuming I'm buying into a background character who occasionally gets a line or two. And like, spoiler, Marvel does this to their characters of color and women. So I would like to care about Falcon. But just being like, you should already care about Falcon. No, I shouldn't. Just like I didn't already care about C-List as Iron Man until you dedicated time and effort into making me do so.
I mean, and now they're dedicating time and effort into making people care about Sam and like his world and his family. And people are complaining that that's too slow and that's not what they want.
Do it better. I mean, like your job is to interest me in what you're doing.
I mean, I thought it was good and enjoyable. I really liked the interactions with his sister and the glimpse of that family dynamic. Did the bank stuff verge on cartoony? Yes. Is that totally inappropriate for a comic book movie?
I thought maybe you complained about that, Will, with the banker's a villain.
I'm fine with him being a villain. It's just the way like that dialogue and stuff was just hammy.
My problem with the Falcon was much more the action scene.
Well, yeah, problem with the action scene, it was pretty boilerplate Marvel.
Yeah,
exactly. It was just so boilerplate Marvel. It wasn't specific.
I mean, they didn't kill Batroc, that's not too boilerplate.
You could have inserted literally any Marvel hero into that scene. Like, there was nothing.
I mean, they can fly. Black Widow couldn't have done it. Hawkeye couldn't have done it.
Sure, I bet you. Yeah, you'd give her a motorcycle and she would ride the motorcycle. Into the
I mean, right? I wouldn't put a
like, motorcycle from one helicopter to another.
Or Hawkeye would use an arrow and a rope, right? Like, there's nothing like. It was just very like, we need a villain. We need to show him being a hero. And it was just, everything felt extremely, I mean, it was okay,
paralleling
wait.
Cap fighting Bedrock at the start of Winter Soldier, and it's illustrating that his skills have advanced to a spot where he could conceivably fill in for Steve. Like, I got the parallel
so
that they
I understand,
were trying
I understand the theme. So, like, it's very, like, cliche action scene, cliche family scene, cliche blank bank scene, and, like, okay. Thank you for this paint-by-numbers hero that you have a bunch of traits for, but not actual character for. I appreciate that. And, like, he's a better actor than that. And, like, there's just more to do. And there's more in this. And maybe later episodes mine it, and I don't care, because I also was not into the first episode of WandaVision, although I was into the second. Like, maybe it's just they're into the slow start for this kind of thing, and it gets better. But
this is only 6 episodes, I think they're going to have to start moving pretty quick next episode.
I very much hope so. And I get the status quo for a TV show, but like,
would not be surprised if Sam and Bucky do not do a huge amount in episode 2 besides getting meeting.
Here's how I want to explain it. I know how I want to put this. It's the most cliche a Marvel movie has felt since Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
I mean, that's fair. Like, it's definitely not...
Where it's just, like, everything is exactly... Like, we are clearly moving from point A to point B, and we're like, here's point A, like, with a big red circle around it, and, like, arrows pointing directly to point B, and, like, then everyone acts exactly the way that it's plot appropriate for them to act at the exact time it's necessary for them to do so. And like, you can immediately tell what the results and consequences of that are going to be. And there's never a surprise. Like, it's
so far we're one episode in, and I don't expect WandaVision level meta twist after meta twist, they are clearly modeling this off of the feel of Winter Soldier. Sure. So I do expect a couple twists as we get run in.
Maybe, but it's not plot twists. It necessarily I'm asking for. It's not so obviously saying here's the genre and here's the arrows that we're playing with. Like, you can have those, but like, in much the same way people complained about it in Doctor Strange, and I don't think Doctor Strange was as egregious as it as like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was. I am frustrated by that. And an episode is a unit of a show. If you want to present this as a miniseries that's meant to be taken as a whole, that's fine. But especially because it came after WandaVision is being presented as like, which was episodic. Each episode needs to work as its own individual thing and as part of the whole. And I don't think it served the first purpose there. And like, I'm coming off really harsh on this. I think it's about as good as the Snyder Cut. I think they are both extremely like...
I guess the reason why Will and I would be pushing back is just we both have a much lower assessment of the Snyder Cut than you do.
That's
Glazer.
True.
Like, but also like, I think in what you're saying, the things you're saying are fair, but I think that you're also missing some of it. I think there will be a slight divide. And I had this actually with my students today because I asked them, what was a fun thing you did over the weekend after you finished your project? And one of them was like, watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which I enjoyed until that trash ending. Oh my God. That, you know, that final moment they screwed Sam over. And then like, I was like, huh, I was not upset by that ending. Cause I know who US agent is and I know where they're going with this. Like, USA like that. But if you're not plugged into like the episode, like the aspects of Cap's mythos, like that moment of like, there's this boring ass white boy who took, you know, who isn't cool like Steve, and you know the government fucked Steve and Sam over, right? And put the like most white bread Kurt Russell's kid as Captain America. Like, no, like if you can get a lot of energy out of that, I think it really reshapes the episode. And that's sort of where I see from people who aren't like as plugged into the Captain America tropes that you or I may have been, because we read the 80s stuff that this was in, or the 90s stuff, or even if you read the Nick Spencer stuff where Sam recently was Cap. So,
yeah.
Like, I love the shit show of political Captain America stories because they're all nuts and make no sense. And
I've got my fingers crossed for Red Skull in a Cap clone body becoming president. Fingers crossed.
Like, I mean, the fact that they picked Flag Smasher to be the villain, like, Flag Smasher is such, like, an asininely stupid Mark Gruenwald political concept that, like, I'm just enjoying, I'm, like, spitefully going to enjoy the discourse that this show produces, because its politics are going to be all over the place.
It definitely will be. I had a thought a moment ago.
So at the end of the day, I think part of the problem might also be I've liked very few solo Cap runs. I think Cap's a character that works better in concert with others. And I liked the Winter Soldier stuff up until the point where Winter Soldier became Cap. And same. It became just let's tour the past over and over again.
I love
try and rip my eyeballs out. It's the same problem I have with Bucky Cap. Yeah,
I love Bucky Cap.
Despise Bucky Cap.
For the same reasons I love Wally West, and that I love when Dick took over the cowl as Batman. Like, I love these legacy heroes that feel they can't possibly live up to the mantle they're trying to fill. And Bucky in particular has, you know, the weight of his own history in a way that, you know, Wally or whoever doesn't. And
yeah, sure.
I loved that. I
could have liked it. And, like, I was willing to give it a try, and I love Wally, and Dick is literally my favorite character. But instead of telling those actual stories with Bucky, they said, let's take flashback tours every single issue, and it was miserable. Like,
yeah,
I don't care about the entire, like, did you know that in World War II, Bucky met this person, and here's how this happened? And it's like, can you just tell a story now, please? I didn't care. But neither necessarily here nor there. I don't think this works alone. I don't think this works as an episode. And also, my students liked the Snyder Cut a lot more than they liked Falcon and Winter Soldier, ooh, which I thought was very surprising. My kids also really, really, really liked WandaVision. Like, all the internet hate of WandaVision did not come through for my kids. Well, the internet was not thinking it was great. But my kids really, really enjoyed WandaVision.
Well, to be fair, I think a very loud subset of the internet.
Depends on where you hang out on the internet, I guess. I was pretty much only reading Marvel Studios on Reddit, which was very favorable.
Yeah.
The Mephisto and X-Men heads weren't upset on our Marvel Studios.
I mean, there was grumbling about Mephisto, but by and large, it was very positive, I thought.
I mean,
maybe that was just good moderation.
It was very positive up to the point in which they didn't execute Pietro being Peter. And then the subsets of Marvel fandom that I follow closely lost their minds. Like, utterly lost all sense of...
I saw a lot perspective. Of that. I mean, I don't know if lost. I saw the crazy jokes. I saw much more balanced takes too, but it was fairly negative overall.
Yeah, there were some balanced takes, but they were definitely drowned out by people being like, I can't trust Marvel anymore. They set this up and didn't execute it.
So my kids were ultimately positive about WandaVision. A few people were mildly disappointed, the nerdier ones. But, the best takes I got for Falcon Ritual was cool, but whatever. And it's more or less what it feels like. It's cool, but whatever. Unless you're steeped in the mythology and really give a shit about the minutia, it's cool, but whatever. It's so paint by the numbers, even casual fans are like, yep.
Yeah. I mean, but it's going to be one of those things that, who knows, the next episode... if Zemo shows up or whatever.
Blow me away. My assumption is still I'm going to like the show, but that doesn't mean I like every episode.
That's fair. I'm going to be interested if they actually go there and they incorporate the truth stuff, which has been floating around in the background, that they're going to be bringing that stuff in. And if they do that, I will be real... Like, this show could end up being extremely interesting, so... And if you had asked me, what, 20 years ago is when that miniseries came out? It's got to be something like that. If that would have been ever incorporated into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I would have been, what? I want to be like, they're never going to make a Captain America movie, much less the Captain America TV show that incorporates. Oh, God.
During the Bush era, I was 100% expecting a Captain America movie. But
I mean, if it was like the Mark Miller Captain America.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
that was the ultimate one, right?
I mean, thank
God that went away. Chris Evans forever.
Yeah, Chris Evans, so well, and to a lesser extent, Ed Brubaker, like, really rescued the character of Captain America from Mark Millar and.
To a lot lesser extent, Ed Brubaker, right? Like, so much like, what's his name? Chris Pratt ruined the character of Star-Lord forever. Chris Evans saved the character of Captain America.
It's true. I think the thing,
I mean, Tony Stark is a totally different character now than he was in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Like, Robert Downey Jr. now.
Well, what's so weird about Iron Man, though, in the comics is, like, unlike the Chris Evans interpretation of Cap, which has been kind of read back into the comics, they keep refusing to make Tony Stark like the movie Tony Stark in the comics, which is like a twist.
Someone gets mad and stops. They do, yeah. And then someone gets mad. Like, Fraction did a total
Fraction tried really to get hard, him yeah.
There. He got him there, and then the next time it's like, maybe not. And then like it was like we got him there, and then it's like, maybe not. And, like,
apparently the new Iron Man run is another attempt to get there. So I'm excited for the trade. It's coming out next week. I'm gonna pick it up. I've heard very, very good things about it. And I'm like, you know what? I'll get Charlie Brown, I'll try another kick at the football of reading Iron Man comics. But I haven't enjoyed an Iron Man comic in a sustained level Fraction. And then the Gillen stuff was good.
I like the Gillen stuff. It was just so weird.
It was just, it was like too Gillen-y and not enough Iron Man-y. Like,
it was a very good Gillen run of a comic. I didn't need it for Iron Man. Again, like, much like Man of Steel would have been a perfectly fine movie if it weren't a Superman movie. I think the Gillen run would have been better if it was like an Iron Man analog as opposed to actual Iron Man.
Yeah, I couldn't stand Bendis's Iron Man, but I couldn't stand Bendis's Iron Man in Avengers. I couldn't stand Bendis's, and then they had what's his face on it for a while. The guy who did Spider-Man for 27 years. Brian Bendis
is the worst thing that's happened to Superman comics in my lifetime.
Your lifetime?
That
includes all the choices Dan DiDio made towards Superman, like the new 52 Superman.
Sure.
And it wasn't written by Morrison?
I don't think that happens without Bendis being in Marvel. Without Avengers Dissembled. And, like, all of the soft relaunchy stuff around that and all of the, like, I don't think any of that exists without Bendis. I think Bendis basically, like, destroyed what I like about superhero comics.
I mean, the Bendis influence is...
And then John definitely, like, peed on it. Right, but like,
Johns and Bendis have they're similar, but they have different priorities and different
John's
ticks.
1,000 times better.
Is he?
And that's not even, oh yeah.
I don't know.
So Johns understands what a plot is.
Well, that's true.
And I don't think Bendis knows how, like, plots are supposed to be structured for the past thousands of years. I don't think he gets it. I don't think he understands that there's supposed to be an arc to a plot. I've read a lot of Bendis's comics, and I've seen no evidence of it.
Bendis's work is one long run-on sentence.
Right.
Is how I've always thought about,
like,
Bendis's work.
Johns is bad at writing, but at least there's a plot arc. So, like, even if I don't like where it went, it still told a story. And, like, Bendis is just shit that happened. All of Bendis's books are, here's some shit that happened.
And then, like, here's people responding to the shit that happened, which sets up the next shit that happens, which leads to people responding to the previous shit that happened.
But they only respond in a way that is entirely plot appropriate. Like, I never feel like anything is ever derailed by a character's decisions. It's like, well, this is plot appropriate, so that's how they're going to act. Yeah, I hate this. You know who I don't hate?
Who?
Adam Conover.
Who's Adam Conover?
He's the host of Adam Ruins Everything,
oh,
which is a show that I, which is actually what I'm slopping, that I realize no longer exists. He's doing an Obama sort of political show for Netflix, apparently coming up, which fundamentally, you know, because when the Obamas hire you for a thing, I guess you do that instead of your true TV show for some reason.
Probably got a lot more money.
I mean, look, if the former president, outside of Trump, is like, hey, want to do a thing for a bunch more money and prestige on this real platform called Netflix versus true TV, you just say yes, right? I get it. I truly understand. It just makes me sad because I absolutely adore Adam Rose everything.
I mean, I looked up this new show that he's doing. It just looks like the political segments of Adam Ruins Everything, but just with a Netflix budget and Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's production company.
I mean, let's see if that's true. If that's true, I'll be perfectly happy. I have my doubts that an Obama-produced thing is going to challenge the status quo at all. And I don't know. At the end of the day, I loved Adam Ruins Everything. I found segments I could use in class pretty regularly. I saw him live twice. I'm a really big fan, and I'm sad to see the show go. Will, have you watched Adam Ruins Everything?
I have not. I've heard the name mentioned a bunch of times. But
all of it is on HBO Max, so you should watch it.
Is it owned by Warner Brothers?
Yeah. I have absolutely no idea who owns it. But it is. He's posted a couple times that it's on HBO Max. I am a nerd. And have bought every, like, watch it in order. It doesn't seem like there's an ongoing plot, but there is. And you will love it, Will. You will absolutely adore it. Okay. Basically, Adam takes things that we, society, believes and ruins them.
Aww.
In cute little segments, three per episode.
Okay.
It's excellent. It's funny. It's smart.
It's less spiteful than it sounds.
It's fun. It's just fun. Yes. Like, it's he's a comedian, so it just works.
Okay. I'll have to check this out sometime.
How about tomorrow? It's in all likelihood, in all honesty, my single favorite show of anything ever. Like, it's that or Gilmore Girls.
Oh, wow.
Like, and Gilmore Girls is clearly just, like, comfort food. Like, it's that as far as anything smart goes. I really just love it.
Yeah, I mean, sitting here in 2021,
yeah,
Gilmore Girls can't be anything else but comfort food.
Right. Which transitions
us. There's a place for that.
To Ginny and Georgia, which is Netflix edgy Gilmore Girls.
I've heard that, but I have yet to check it out.
I mean, literally in the first episode, the mother goes, come on, we're the Gilmore Girls.
Oh.
She does that in the trailer, too.
Like, it knows it's Gilmore Girls. It's Gilmore Girls, where the twist is the daughter is half black and the mom is a con artist.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's a Jesse and Dean and everything. Like, it's...
Are they as insufferable
like, I just, as Jesse I, and I Dean? Just, what?
Are they as insufferable as Jesse and Dean?
Oh, they're worse. It's Netflix.
They're worse. So they're like, worse.
They're like if Riverdale was earnest versions of Jesse and Dean.
Oh my god, no.
It's absolutely atrocious, and I kind of love it, but kind of hate it. Or kind of hate myself for loving it, or kind of love myself for hating it.
A lot of Netflix.
Can't get anywhere.
And a lot of Netflix. I mean, you're talking to someone who's watched both seasons of Virgin River, so I understand loving something but hating yourself for loving it.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
55-year-old white woman television show of all time, but I enjoyed it a lot. So
you would like and hate Ginny and Georgia. Like, my wife really enjoys it, right? Like, but the second you're critical of it all, you're like, oh dear. Oh dear. Like, it's occasionally really funny and charming. And like, it's at its best when it stops trying to be Netflix and it's just like, look, we're Gilmore Girls for a scene. But yeah, it's like sex and drugs and like real issues, and it's just like, ugh, that it doesn't have the weight to handle. Oh my god, Roy, you will love hate when they're like, we're teenagers, and half the time they're teenagers, and half the time it's like, you're 30-year-old white women, right? Teenagers, right? Like, just please.
Yeah. But the actors, like, at least don't look like 48-year-olds.
So,
like, you, Riverdale does at this point.
Roy, do you know what left on red is? Do you know what being left on red is?
Yes, I know what being left on red is.
Okay, so the show doesn't. And like, there's a point where the teenage girl sends her boyfriend a picture, and like, she gets really upset because he started to respond and didn't respond, and like, clearly that's unnecessary. You just say he left her on red, and like, every teenager in the world is just set. Every teenager is like, well, clearly we're all set. She left, like, she sent a sexy picture. He left her on red. They're at war. We all get that, right? Like,
yes.
The show does not get that.
I mean, you don't have to be a teenager to understand that.
Sure, but their goal is for teenagers, right? Like, and when the writers of the show clearly don't understand that concept, it's like, And then there's a couple good gags that come out of it, and I sort of just forgive it anyway. But it's worth watching. Besides, obviously, it's Netflix, so awkward sexualization of teenagers.
What? No.
Yeah, it's Netflix. They know their audience. I am not it. But hey, Netflix, if you want to get me to keep watching your random bad TV shows, keep making them Gilmore Girls ripoffs. I will watch all of them.
Well, they know how they can get viewers.
Specifically, me. That's everything on our watch list, and it's been an hour and 20 minutes. Well, less, because Will had to ditch us for a while. You suck, Will.
I know.
Why are we talking about Kemco RPGs?
All I want to bring up on that front is just to ask if either of you guys have played them, because they are constantly shoved in front of me, all of these 2D JRPGs that they are making.
They're bad. Don't do it.
Okay.
There's occasional okay ones, but they're like basically RPG Maker games, and they're just like,
yeah, that's what I thought. They first started getting shoved on me in, like, you know, the Google Play Store on my phone, but I've realized over the course of the last year that now they've been pushed out to consoles, and I see them recommended to me.
I think they're on Steam,
Switch all the time.
They're on.
Yeah. So they're also on
Steam. You still haven't played Dragon Quest V or Radiant Historia?
I did, like, unless you've Quest V, at least.
So unless you've played like actual good RPGs, there's no reason to play a Kemco RPG.
You're literally.
I mean, I wasn't rushing to play these. I was just curious if either of you guys had. So
I have not. I haven't even come close to finishing Strikers, so I'm not in the world for a new.
I mean, they're RPG. Old, right? They've been out since. They've been out for a long time.
Well, I meant new RPG to play. That's what I'm saying.
Oh. Yeah, I had occasionally, like, screw around with a couple back in the day. God. What era was that? It almost had to be PSP, but my memory is gone. Because, again, drunk and old. But they're consistently, like, milquetoast. I think milquetoast is the word I'm looking for. And, like, not milquetoast in a charming or fun way. It's just... I don't know why you would do that unless you've played everything else.
Oh, wow. Huh. Yeah. I mean, I played a lot of mediocre indie RPGs, let me tell you, both inspired by Japan and inspired by Western tropes. So I can be surprised. I can definitely feel the energy that these games exude, but
if a listener ever wants a JRPG recommendation, message the cast. We will come up with one. Do not just buy a Kemco game.
Because there are so many.
Just buy Persona 5.
I am legitimately surprised. I'm on their website. They've got 12 pages of RPGs, yeah, with all but the last page having 9 RPGs per page.
Yeah, that's not surprising. They've been doing this for a long time. They just pump out bad RPGs.
Yeah.
But if you want, like... There is no system I can't recommend an RPG for your taste for, a JRPG for your taste for. If you want a WRPG, that's Richard Rogers.
I have played a lot of Western RPGs, that is true.
But like, I can find you a JRPG for any system, likely one you haven't played, unless you've played everything.
Right.
There was some video game news that I guess Will wanted to talk about, which was what, Will?
Well, again, this is just quick passing stuff. I'm kind of excited and interested to see that Octopath is coming to Xbox now.
I saw that. Yeah. It's coming soon, right? Like at the end of the month, right? Something like that.
That was like the first thing I picked up when I got a Switch.
That's what convinced me to buy a Switch.
Yeah, that was a decent chunk.
Some former co-host of the show was like, if you buy a Switch, I work at a game store and we have a copy. I will send it to you. And shockingly never sent it to me.
How dare they?
Did you figure out which former host it is? Because there's one former host who is prone to things like that, especially. And might have been excommunicated from a community for much larger offenses.
Not giving you a free game.
Then not giving me a free... Well, if it was like, buy this and I will send you this, that was a little annoying. Like 2 weeks later, the whole world fell apart for that person.
Yes. Well...
Did you like all of Octopath? Did you beat Octopath?
I haven't beaten Octopath, I do admit. It does get a little... I don't know. I liked most of the systems, but it does get a little... It feels kind of repetitive, grindy, but it's also like weird the way stuff doesn't interconnect as much as I want between the stories and stuff.
It needed a way for me to not have every random battle be intensely involved, or it needed the stories to push me through more.
Yeah.
Like that it didn't either. I got to almost the end. I think I got through halfway through everyone's chapter 3. And I was like, I have to do what now? And just quit. Like, what chapter did you get to?
Now?
So there's four chapters.
Yeah, there's four, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think I wandered off in the middle of chapter 2. I hate to admit.
I mean,
like,
no, that's reasonable.
I was enjoying, like, I love so much about that game. But it just didn't quite have the hook to like grab me and keep me in, like, say, Final Fantasy VI or something.
I mean, so there's so many easy fixes, too, is what drove me crazy. Like, instead of like half requiring all this level grinding, just like make the level requirements lower. Or instead of doing random battles, just stick everyone on screen and make battles like a choice. Or give me an auto battler, or make some battles just cheap, easy. Like, they were just like, no, you have to work for everything, and everyone has to be level 70 by the end. And it's just like, no, like, you don't have a strong central narrative to make me want to grind through this. But yeah, it's a wonderful game that should have been an all-timer and just didn't quite get there.
Yeah, you're not selling me on ever playing it, so.
You shouldn't. I don't think people who haven't played it, like, it's the single best battle system, I think. Turn-based battle system, straight turn-based battle system of JRPG. Well, okay, Radiant Historia.
It is a really good system, but I haven't gotten to play Radiant Historia.
Radiant Historia is my favorite system ever.
Are we talking about traditional JRPG?
Turn-based.
Yeah.
Turn-based JRPG?
Like, not tactics, turn-based system.
On a pure like mechanical level, not thinking about the game.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to beat Final Fantasy X.
Oh, I hate Final Fantasy X. I don't like the
X system.
Is very elegant and very smooth.
So my favorites are: have you guys played Grandia?
The original.
I played Grandia.
Grandia 2 is fine. So the Grandia system...
Three was the one on Dreamcast,
I did one and two are the ones on Dreamcast.
But was released on PlayStation 1 or 2, I don't remember.
Then it must have been 2 that I played. I know I did not play the original.
2 is the one with the edgelordy... there's a Grandia collection on Switch that's 100% worth it. I've beat 1 and 2. But 2 is one with the edgelordy guy who learns to be a person. It's like... Okay. So Grandia... I don't know. I started playing another Tales game, not that it has anything to do with anything, and like I keep reminding myself that I really hate the battle system.
Yeah, the battle system is terrible. It also has high skill jumps. Like, I just, like, I'm actually enjoying this game's story, but I just couldn't beat a boss, and I'm like, I'm not going to play this anymore.
So the best turn-based systems I've ever played are, I think, Raiden Historia is one. And then it's like a jumble of Shadow Hearts. Have you guys played Shadow Hearts?
No. That's the one that has the button that you press, right? The, like,
yeah, it does stuff. Yep. And it's very easy to time. And in the second one, the button is totally customizable. It's I'm assuming that one of you played Legend Dragoon.
A long time ago. I might have played that on Sega CD.
It's similar to, it was a Legend it was Dragoon. A was never say, it was never, it PlayStation? Yeah, it was only it? PS1.
Maybe it was PS1 then.
So it's, you're thinking Lunar, I assume. But so, like, it's like Legend of Dragoon or Super Mario RPG, but, like, simpler. The button press. Like, it was an amazingly elegant system that worked wonderfully. If anyone played Shadow Hearts, they will back
it up. Did you, like, get access to Shadow Hearts today?
I mean, sure, emulation is a thing.
Yeah, and outside of emulating it.
I mean, you can buy a PS2. That's it.
Well, I actually still own
it. It's one of my single favorite RPGs ever. It's very hard for me to separate the two games, though. They're really one game to me. Shadow Hearts 3 is also a game, but I hated Shadow Hearts 3, so let's not count that. The battle system is still wonderful. So Shadow Hearts, Grandia, Radiant Historia. If we count the first Valkyrie profile, I'm not sure if we should.
Oh, man. I do love that game, but it's a very different type of
system. Yeah, turn-based system. But, like, so those three, and the Persona / SMT push turn system is still very elegant.
Oh, yes. I think particularly the where 5 has put it, is Persona 5, is really good. It'll be interesting to see what Shin Megami Tensei 5 looks like, right? Is 5? It's not 6. Mm-hmm. It's Nocturne is coming out, by the way. The remaster.
I'm gonna buy it. I played it. So I played it and Digital Devil Saga, but I'm old, so only really remember Digital Devil Saga. What are you gonna do?
I played the Digital Devil Saga remaster, but not.
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was one.
I don't believe so.
I think it was Digital Devil Saga. Was what? Digital Devil Saga. Maybe it's a different one, a different sub-series.
Is two PS2 games that basically are based on, like, Eastern philosophy, like Hinduism largely, and they're phenomenal.
Which Shin Megami Tensei sub-series am I thinking about?
Devil Summoner?
No, it's not Devil Summoner. There we go.
Devil Survivor?
Might be Devil Survivor. Oh my god.
Ooh. Devil Survivor.
It's not ring a bell.
Yeah, I know all of the nonsense. But, like, those are my big turn-based systems. As far as I can remember off the top of my head, I bet you there's a couple others I'm just straight up forgetting. But I'm running through systems that more or less covers it. I'll always have a soft spot for, like, the simpleness of Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI, but they're obviously not among the best.
Yes, that's it is Digital Devil Survivor. That's what it is. I played both of the remasters of the first and the second. Yeah.
So
that's it.
Who the person took a while reviewer on the
Wikipedia page.
Reviewer who ended up a friend of mine reviewed a lot of SMT games and was like, get this series. So I bought all of the American SMTs I could find back in the day. Oh, does Xenogears count as turn-based? I guess.
No one is going to... you cannot say that the Xenogears battle system is one of the greatest of all time.
I think it's very clunky. Fun. Yeah, it's very... The whole game is very clunky. Like, yeah, there's never been a game that needed a remake as badly as Xenogears. Sorry to everyone who loves the game.
I mean, I've just Final Fantasy VIII, man. Final Fantasy VIII needs a remake. I would love a Final Fantasy. If I could will any video game into existence, because BioWare is re-releasing
Mass Effect for PlayStation 4. Now I can spend my energy willing Final Fantasy VIII's remake into existence. So that's I finally got my Mass Effect.
Does it have to be remade as a game, or could it just be like a 2-hour long cinematic that I could just watch and be done with?
That's fair. I think there's some cool ideas in Final Fantasy VIII that would be interesting if updated to modern day design principles, but you know, that's a whole different podcast.
That's fair.
To build on some stuff that's also coming out, they also announced a third Life is Strange game, technically a fourth.
Hooray! Which is sort of the fourth, really. Tell me why. Should have just been called Life is Strange 3.
Yeah, but it's not... Well, the reason why it's not called Life is Strange 3 is because it's not developed by Donod? Is that how you say that company's name?
Donod.
It's developed by Deck Nine, I believe is what the name of the company is, which are the people who did Beyond the Storm, right?
But that's the same with Life is Strange 3.
Right. But what I'm saying is the original company are the ones that get the numbered editions, right? They didn't call Beyond the Storm or Beneath the Storm or whatever the Chloe game was called is not two. But two was not developed by Deck Nine. It was developed by
They were literally calling this new one Life is Strange 3 subtitle whatever.
No, it's Life is Strange subtitle. It's not Life is Strange 3. But anyway, it looks super cool. If you like these kinds of games, you should definitely, it's definitely something to watch out for at the end of the year. And the other video game news that hopped into my bin is the avant-garde game of 2019 that every single person told me I should play, Disco Elysium, is finally coming out on the PlayStation 4 after promising it for 2 years. But they are other indie developers, so it's understandable that it took a while. Because I refused to pay it on the PC because I wanted to play it with Ala around. So I will probably be picking that up over spring break to check out. Hopefully I'll have Strikers done by then so I can feel good about spending the money on another RPG while I have Strikers, which should be holding my attention. That's pretty exciting too. So this looks like a pretty decent spring for role-playing game fans. If you like Monster Hunter, that's also comes out Thursday. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not a Monster Hunter person, but people like it. So,
I've been screwing around with, I'm not really counting it as a game I'm playing because I literally play 5 minutes at a time. East 8, I know 9 came out, but it's very fun. It's very fun.
Yeah.
It's also a game I think I'm playing as much because I can play it mindlessly and really enjoy the music for 10 minutes and then put it down and not think about it again at all.
It's true. I mean, the music in all... what is the name of the developer? Falcom, there we
Nihon,
go.
Nihon Falcom, yeah.
Yeah, Falcom games are good. I mean, you can't help but love the Trails of Cold Steel music. It's very good. Very, very good.
All right. I bought Super Mario 3D All-Stars. If you haven't bought Super Mario 3D All-Stars, it's leaving the eShop. And apparently Nintendo isn't making any more of it at the end of March, so you should get it.
What? They're creating that Disney vault?
Yep. This isn't far from the first time Nintendo has done this.
I did not actually realize they were doing that.
They create false scarcity all the time with their games.
Yeah, they're also doing the same thing with, although I don't believe it's even physical, Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon? Is that what it's called? What's it called?
Oh, yeah, the original, it's not... It's not the re-release, because there is a re-release of this game. It's the original. It's Fire Emblem is the original name of the game. But Fire Emblem mm-hmm. Shadow Dragon. Yeah, it's the original Fire Emblem.
The first Fire Emblem.
It's not even a it's kind of closer to a remaster, because they actually literally remade it. Like, with full voice acting and modern design principles and modern Fire Emblem tropes. But this is literally, like, just, like, making it so it will function on your Switch, but it's the original 1990X game. I don't remember what year it came out. So there's two differences, because I own the Game Boy remakes, or not Game Boy, but the 3DS remakes. This is not a remake. This is a remaster.
Yeah. So either way, that's leaving too. But I bought the physical copy of 3D All-Stars because, I mean, if it disappears and Noah decides he likes Mario in 5 years, I'd rather just have it than have to try and track it down. And if Noah doesn't decide he likes it, I doubt it's ever going to actually lose value, even if it doesn't necessarily accrue value, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like it could end up being $200, right? But if it doesn't, I don't think it's ever going to be like, oh, this is a dime a dozen since they've created the scarcity. So, like, I figure worst case, I'll sell it for what I paid in a couple of years and whatever.
Yeah, if you, particularly if you don't open it.
Yeah, I'm not opening it until it's ready.
The whole value. I mean, I still have an original Final Fantasy VII CDs. Those are actually worth something.
Nice. I mean, it occurs to me that I sold all my JRPGs around 2008-ish, and I had games that would be like $300-$400 now. So, like, looking back, yeah, and I sold them for 78.
Take a look at the price of some of my games right now. I might need
what do you got?
Some stuff. Let me go over here and look at the shelf and see what I still have physical copies of. One moment.
Yeah, my JRPGs survived my ex's purge of my DVD collection / video game collection. I kept my JRPGs.
Yeah, it was a shitty ex too. Like, I had the original Valkyrie Profile, which was, I think, $90 at the. Oh, that's the.
Okay, here we go.
Where's the original Valkyrie Profile? It's $177 now.
I won't go through everything, but here's a stack of PlayStation 1 games I've got. Greatest Hits, Final Fantasy VII.
I don't
Vanguard Bandits. Greatest
Hits, I don't believe, is worth as much, unfortunately.
Yeah, probably not. Vanguard Bandits, Ogre Battle.
Wait, slow down. Vanguard Bandits, PlayStation 1, complete in box with manual, is... you can find it. Complete is $100. If you just discs are cheaper, but complete is
$100. Right, right, always. Limited edition Ogre Battle?
Tactics Ogre, PS1, $127. Complete is...
Wait, you said Tactics Ogre? This is Ogre Battle.
Oh, Ogre Battle PS1?
Yeah.
I forgot that existed.
Yeah. I had actually kind of forgotten. I mainly remembered playing it on a Super Nintendo emulator.
So apparently really cheap, like $20. One on sale for like $10. There's others for $80. There's one complete offered for $320. Seems like you can expect.
Big jump there.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Xenogears?
I don't think it's that expensive.
Yeah.
Because
Final Fantasy Chronicles, then?
Xenogears, excuse me. Xenogears PS1 complete is $100-ish.
Okay.
You can find it for cheaper, but it's 100-ish. What else?
Final Fantasy Chronicles. I've got anthologies around here somewhere, too.
I know what that is. Only like $30.
Is Chronicles the one that was like...
Four in Trigger?
Okay. Okay.
Sam yells at us about that like he was even born when they came out. It's like, okay, fetus, thank you. I'm glad that you figured this out 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Is Sam that young?
He's like 25.
I was going to say, isn't he not yet 30?
Yeah, he's like 25 or something. He's younger than Kyle. Like, and he's like...
He's younger than Kyle and Gaiman.
Yeah, so like I bought Final Fantasy Chronicles day one in college, so yeah. It's how I played Chrono Trigger because I failed to beat Chrono Trigger. I traded in a Super Nintendo for a friend for a while, didn't beat Chrono Trigger, then got it again and got to the very end and was like, but I don't want this game to end, and then never beat it. And I finally beat it like 5 years ago for the first time.
Well, Will, I feel like of all Props and Slops episodes, this one has truly drifted into the danger zone. I think we've lost any pretense that this conversation exists as a podcast.
Fact.
So I feel like we should call this one.
Wait, want to hear something ridiculous?
Sure.
This is the danger zone. I used to have Panzer Dragoon Saga complete. It's $690 now.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, you could take a nice vacation with that money.
Mm-hmm. There's a pre-owned complete for $1,400. It's... yeah.
Wow.
Wish I had held on to that. Well, oh, that's... I feel like we're getting a remake at some point soon, by the way. Enjoy
the game. Sure, we will.
Look, they keep remaking the Panzer Dragoon non-Sega games, so at some point, right? I hate Sega. Bye.
See you all in 2 weeks.
That's the danger zone.